Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox, and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So, why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon to the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, as we sit just 2.5 short weeks away from the beginning of the 2024 New York baseball season. How are y'all feeling? We got a lot to discuss today, including the idea that Carlos Mendoza may alter the complexion of the New York Met lineup by not leading off Brandon Nimmo. We'll talk about not really a new rule in baseball, but a new point of emphasis in Major League Baseball that we got a preview of if you've watched some of these spring training games, and that's blocking bases will now be enforced as instruction. We'll have some thoughts on Edwin Diaz, the availability of J.D. Davis, and the final bullpen spots. But let's start off with this lineup. It was floated out in the last couple of days that Carlos Mendoza would at least consider changing something that seems pretty straightforward about the Met lineup, and that's not leading off Brandon Nimmo. And I thought of you, Pete, because you, Hoff, have mentioned in the past the idea of leading off Jeff McNeil. And I haven't liked it, and we've argued about it, and it's never happened. But now, at least it seems to be somewhat on the table, even if Mendoza tried to kind of short-circuit the controversy by making it seem like it is still very likely Brandon Nimmo is going to be the leadoff hitter. My opinion on this, and I've done a lot of research over the last 2 days, has not changed. Spoiler alert. I still, for the life of me, would not lead anybody else off on this team besides Brandon Nimmo. With that said, we're going to dive into the facts. We're going to dive into the stats. We're going to dive into the options. But I want to make that clear off the top. My opinion has not changed. So you tell me, Hoff, since this is something you've wanted for a while, why do you want Brandon Nimmo out of the leadoff hole?
So I think, and I do have to say, preface something, I have changed my mind since they've talked about Brandon Nimmo potentially being moved out of this leadoff, but not with Jeff McNeil being the leadoff guy. Or Brandon Nimmo, I still want to be moved away. It's just who's going to actually be the leadoff person. So let's start with Brandon Nimmo. I think that Brandon Nimmo is a good quality ball player, but I don't think his offensive skill set is good enough to be in the top three. You talked about it more than anything else. You need the best players to get at bats. I don't think Brandon Nimmo is that type of guy. So if we're going to give the best three players every opportunity to get in that bat, Brandon Nimmo is not one of those guys. Also, when it comes down to a game where speed is now opened up and the guy stole three bases last year, to me, that is that's a negative. That's something that if you're going to have someone that can actually run, who has speed and doesn't use it, is a disadvantage. So you need to have someone to actually take that place that can do everything and more. And that's why Brendan Nimmo cannot be the leadoff guy.
All right. So here's the exercise we all have to do for ourselves. You know, Pete has done it basically. I'm about to do it. And everybody listening has to do this same exercise. And that is, what are the skill sets you want from a leadoff hitter? Now, you laid out one of the things that's always traditionally been there, which is stealing a base. That's always been there. And maybe more so today because of the fact that we've got more stolen bases in Major League Baseball because of the rule changes from a year ago. That is something that, for you, you feel strongly about. There is no denying that even with the rule changes last year, Brendan Nimmo did not add that to his repertoire. I mean, he, forget about stealing three bases, he attempted three stolen bases all year. So clearly Brendan Nimmo was not looking to steal bases when he got on base. Just to put that in perspective, Francisco Alvarez was a guy who stole two bases. So Brendan Nimmo only stole one more base than Francisco Alvarez. And I do want to correct myself. Nimmo attempted six steals. He was 3 for 6. So he was not exactly efficient in the times he did it. Here's the way I look at it. To me, if I'm making a list of the skill sets I need from a leadoff hitter, there is something I put number one above anything else, and it's not close. And that is the ability to get on base. Because at the end of the day, my best hitters are coming up at 2, 3, and 4. And I want them to come up with guys on base. So what I've learned over the years is that while stealing bases is great and stealing bases is nice and having a leadoff hitter that's lightning fast certainly fits kind of the description we always had growing up. If you can't get on base, it's meaningless. It means absolutely nothing if your on base percentage is .310. You have to get on base. So again, everyone comes to their own conclusion about this. To me, I'm making my list of things I need from a leadoff hitter. Number one, and it's probably number one through 10, to be honest with you. It's the same thing. Get on base. Get on base. Get on base. Get on base. If you can get on base and then you're going to steal bases, great. I mean, that's Ricky Henderson. Look, a part of why Ricky Henderson is the greatest leadoff hitter of all time is because he did those two things better than maybe anybody in the history of the game. He got on base better than anybody. And then once he was there, he would turn a walk into a double. And that's great. And that's fantastic. And if you can find somebody that gets on base 40% of the time, and then every time he gets to first, he's stealing second 65 times, that is amazing. So I guess that explains very quickly why I'm partial to Brendan Nimmo. Because when you look at the rest of this roster, who gets on base at the clip that Brendan Nimmo does? Who? Last year, Brendan Nimmo got on base at a .363 clip, which is pretty damn good, .363. That's not bad. Do you know who had the second highest on-base percentage after Brendan Nimmo? The answer is Francisco Lindor, and it drops all the way down to .336. Then you go to Jeff McNeil at .333, Pete Alonso at .318, Starling Marte at .301. We're talking about guys that could qualify. To me, I don't have anybody on this roster that can even challenge Brendan Nimmo as a leadoff hitter. Actually, the only guy who can is Francisco Lindor. But then you got to ask yourself, is that really worth it? Like, don't you want Lindor being one of those guys to drive people in? So, look, you made the point, and I've said this before too. I want my best hitters batting in the first inning. The Mets right now's best hitters are whom? Like, ask yourself that. Who are the three guys that need to be on that list? We all would agree Francisco Lindor is one of them. We probably agree Pete Alonso is another one of them. So who's the third? Is it Starling Marte? Well, look, if it's the Starling Marte from 2022, maybe we're having a conversation. But by the way, even the Starling Marte of 2022, and he was damn good, got on base at a .347 clip, which isn't bad, but it's still lower than Brendan Nimmo. So I guess where I'm very partial on this is you could have those other skill sets you describe, Pete, but they mean a lot less if you're not getting on base. And Brendan Nimmo, for guys on this Met roster, is the most reliable on-base guy, and that matters.
See, I get that, but here's the thing is, if Nimmo, the way I look at it is this. If Nimmo singles or walks 90% of the time, or 90% of the time he's on base, and he can't go first to third. He's basically station to station. He goes second base, third base. You know, you can't score him with the sack fly. You can't score him with a, you know, any sort of like other thing besides a base hit because he can't steal a base. I'm looking at all the optics.
But that, you know what? That's not fair. Brandon Nimmo is not a bad base runner. He is not a slow base runner. He is not a station-to-station base runner. He's just not a big stolen base guy. And, like, that's a cool weapon to have. Like, if you've got guys that can steal bases, it's great. Like, I don't want to minimize it, especially in this day and age. And the Mets clearly have guys coming up who could eventually supplant Brandon Nimmo as a leadoff hitter. Like, Jet Williams, to me, is going to be the leadoff hitter of the future for the New York Mets, assuming he becomes the guy he's projected to be. Why? Because Jet Williams possesses the two skill sets that when we merge together is the ideal leadoff hitter. He can steal bases. I think Jet Williams will steal 50 bases in the major leagues easily. And he gets on base at a really high clip. He has a great eye for a 20-year-old. So there's going to be a day, and maybe it's actually August of this season, I don't know, where we're going to be talking about Jet being the guy that knocks Nimmo out of the leadoff spot. We're just not there yet. Like, there isn't anybody on this roster today. I mean, is it really Starling Marte? Like, ask yourself that. Now, Starling Marte, to his credit last year, did steal 24 bases, which is a pretty big number considering you only played 86 games. So I definitely agree that Marte could be that guy. I just don't know if I can rely on him to get on base. And I'll tell you something else that really does matter. And I think this always mattered. But in 2024, I'd say it matters a little bit more. It's not just getting on base. It's not just walking, earning a walk. I think it's getting the opposing starting pitcher to throw a lot of pitches early in a game. And I think that matters more than ever because that pitch count is treated like the Bible if you're a manager of the opposing team. And if you can get the pitch count of a good starting pitcher up into the 80s and 90s, you're getting them out of the game. So if Brandon Nimmo, and I remember Buck Showalter would say this, and I would agree with him, that there were some at-bats he'd have that in the first inning would completely set the tone for the game and would make a big difference on the outcome. And I think when that happened is when Brandon Nimmo leads off a game and has a 9-pitch at-bat. Let's say he grounds out to second base. It doesn't even end with a walk or a double or a home run. He grounds out to second base, but he works a 9-pitch at-bat. All of a sudden, you have put the opposing starting pitcher, and I don't give a damn who they are. They could even be Gerrit Cole. They all face pitch counts. They all face the rules that if they hit a certain number, they're coming out of the game. To have a guy who starts the game off by just giving you a battle and giving you a workout, that is a huge advantage to eventually getting that starter out of a game. Starling Marte and Jeff McNeil, I don't include Lindor because I think Lindor could be good at this. I just don't think the Met lineup is necessarily deep enough for him to go to the one spot, but more on that later. I don't think any of those other real options could work a starting pitcher and have that kind of at-bat on a consistent basis the way Brandon Nimmo does and has.
But maybe I'm wrong with this. To 2022, we talked about that, and that was incredible. He was. I mean, the 10, 11 pitch at-bat to start the game off is incredible. I don't remember him going deep into counts last year to start games off. I just don't. I feel like that changed with him hitting a little bit of power.
I think he still did it. Now, I don't know if it matched specifically what he did in 2022. It's kind of funny because Brandon Nimmo's overall like stats are very similar from 22 to 23. He did add a little bit of pop. There's no doubt about that. But for the most part, it was very, very similar. But it did seem like he was still working those same at-bats, like those same long at-bats. He may not have matched what he did in 2022, but he was still giving you those long at-bats. Jeff McNeil wouldn't do that. Now, you said earlier McNeil's not the guy. Like, you've kind of soured on him being the leadoff hitter. So if you're moving Nimmo out of the leadoff spot, who would you have leadoff?
The two you actually talked about. It's Francisco Lindor, I think I'm leaning towards the most. And then Starling Marte is the other guy. And the reason why I say that is if Starling Marte is of 2022 of what he was, and even last year with the speed, like you said, 24 stolen bases in 86 games, I think you have Pete Alonso and being the third of Marte, Lindor, Alonso, because, again, you have the opportunities for Lindor and Alonso to drive in runs. But you also, if it's not Marte, and it is Lindor. You have Lindor, Alvarez, Alonso. And again, you give yourself, those are your three best hitters. It's Lindor, Alvarez, and Alonso, your three best hitters on the team. Just the power numbers between Alonso and Alvarez, the two, you know, you can't match that with anybody else on the team. So you put Lindor in there, make him the leadoff, and then Nimmo, you put at nine. That's where you put him. I know that sucks, but you put no, you put him at nine because there
he's
you
too
go.
Too good for that.
Is he really?
Yeah. So 2 years ago, like 2.5 years ago, I was completely with you. I always wanted Brandon Nimmo batting ninth for the reasons you gave. Like, you're giving yourself that double leadoff hitter. He's a high on base guy. I think he graduated from that. I really do. I think he's a good enough player, and I don't think the Met lineup is necessarily deep enough to warrant that. If we're living in a universe, and maybe this is the world we're living in next year, where Jet Williams has blossomed into a reliable, everyday player the way his minor league numbers dictate. Drew Gilbert, the same thing. They added Juan Soto in free agency. You know, we're talking about like this incredibly deep lineup. Then I think it's a different discussion. Then I think I'd say, okay, I got to consider it. I don't think this lineup right now, when you look at what's in it, the questions around it, and again, I think the lineup will actually be a strength, but I don't think it's deep enough right now to send Brandon Nimmo to the nine hole. I will back up one point about Lindor. Francisco Lindor, throughout his major league career, if you look at where he's hit in the batting order, obviously a lot of it with Cleveland, now with the Mets, he has batted first, second, and third almost in equal distribution throughout his major league career.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here with the Mets, it's mostly been three, but back in 2017 and 18, Lindor was leading off constantly for Cleveland. And if you look at his overall numbers, believe it or not, he has hit more home runs in his major league career by a healthy margin as a leadoff hitter. His highest OPS in his major league career, 855. As a leadoff hitter, what does it mean? It just means that he's been good at it and comfortable at it. It doesn't mean he's necessarily better batting leadoff than second or third, because I think when you look at his overall numbers, and I'll give it to you real quick, batting first, which he did a lot in 18 and 19. Those are the 2 years where he really did it a ton, a little bit in 2017, and then very briefly in 2020. And then he did it with us for four games in 2021. But you look at his numbers when leading off, 276 batting average, 855 OPS, 90 home runs, 220 RBIs, 58 stolen bases in 384 games. Batting second, 383 games. So basically the exact same amount of games. A batting average that's 10 points lower, 266. An OPS of 783, which is about 70 points lower. 62 home runs, which is 28 fewer home runs, and 38 stolen bases, which is 20 fewer stolen bases than as a leadoff hitter. Now, to give you proper context, He has batted second a lot in 2021, which was not a good year for him, his first year with the Mets. He did it in 28 games in 22, and he did it in 68 games in 2023. He did it in 93 games in 2017. His numbers were really brought down by what he did in 2021, his first year with the Mets. And then batting third, the thing he has done 419 times. He did it 70 times last year, 133 times in 2022. Overall, when he bats third, 280, which is the highest batting average he has in any batting position. 58 home runs, which is the fewest of the home runs he's hit at any batting position. And an 801 OPS, he has 52 stolen bases. Lindor has shown he can do it. He's also shown he doesn't really change his philosophy at the plate, because when he was batting first as compared to batting third, it's not like his on-base percentage changed in any kind of dramatic way. It didn't. And he was walking at pretty much the same clip. He was actually hitting for more power as a leadoff hitter. What makes this difficult sometimes is that he was mostly leading off in his years in Cleveland, and some of his years in Cleveland were better than the years he had with the Mets. So that's the one thing to keep in mind. I think he can do it, but all right, you make him the leadoff hitter. Let's build the lineup from there. Francisco Lindor is leading off. Who's batting second? If that's what you decide to do, who bats two, Pete, in your lineup with Lindor leading off?
It's Francisco Alvarez.
Oh, so we're bumping Alvarez up the two. And then what do? You go Alonso three, McNeil four, Marte five, and then you've got Nimmo in that nine hole?
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. I think that McNeil and Marte between four and five, they might be interchangeable, but I think it's got to be Lindor, Alvarez, Alonso to start it off. And then depending on, listen, we need McNeil to hit. He has to. And if he's bound for a bounce back season, and if Alonso and Alvarez are getting on base more because of, you know, Alonso protecting Alvarez and Lindor's getting on base, McNeil might have opportunities to actually drive in people while they're on base.
Yeah, I think my ideal lineup as of right now is Nimmo 1, Lindor 2, Alonso 3, Alvarez 4, McNeil 5, Marte 6, Beatty 7, and Vientos 8, Bader 9. That, by the way, is a lengthy lineup, too. You get some length there. But I'm with you on moving Alvarez up. I don't know if I'd go to the two-hole quite yet, but I like him, as I've said, protecting Pete Alonso. He's the guy I would look to protect Pete, because I think a part of the thinking here is that Nimmo could be the guy to protect Pete Alonso, that putting that left-handed stick behind Pete would solve that issue. And look, I think Brandon Nimmo is a good enough hitter, and he's obviously added some power to his game from last year. You also kind of lean in towards the fact he's not stealing any bases when he's sitting behind Pete. But then when he draws that hard-earned walk, he's getting on base for who? He's getting on base for Starling Marte in the bottom half of the batting order, as opposed to wasting that moment where he gets on base and he gives Lindor and Alvarez and Alonso an opportunity to drive him in. That's sort of the way I look at it. I think that McNeil, even at his best when he's hitting, is not a high walk guy. His walk percentage is below the major league average, so he doesn't draw a particularly high amount of walks. Like when his on base is high, it's because his batting average is really high, which, by the way, is fine. Like it serves the same purpose. But when he slumps, it's not like he's getting on base. And that's the other thing. Guys are going to slump. So when you have a guy who's on base is only high because he's got a high batting average, that may seem like, well, that's fine. Who cares? Well, it's not fine when he's in a 2-for-30. Because when he's in a 2-for-30, he's not getting on base. When you're Brandon Nimmo and you're in a 2-for-30, you're still drawing walks. You're still getting on base. And so if you fundamentally disagree with me right now, if you are screaming at the car or the phone or the hell you're listening to Rico Bronya, and thank you for subscribing, the reason you disagree is because we just fundamentally look at the role of the leadoff hitter differently. That's okay. I mean, there's no necessarily right answer to it. But that's really where the disagreement would come from. Do you value drawing walks, getting on base, and having long at-bats as part of your leadoff hitter? If you do, as of right now, until Drew Gilbert or Jet Williams prove they're major leaguers. As of right now, the only option to lead off is Brandon Nimmo. Now, I'm not mad at Carlos Mendoza for thinking about it and talking about it, but to me, it doesn't make sense. There is one thing, though, that does scare me, and I go all the way back to 2010. In 2010, Jerry Manuel had an idea. He had a crazy idea, and that idea was, why not hit Jose Reyes third? Remember that whole thing, Hoff? Remember the whole craze of, let's take one of the best leadoff hitters in the history of the franchise and let's move him to the three hole. Remember that whole thing?
Oh, how could you forget it? I mean, it disrupted everything.
It was funny because they decide to play with it in spring training of 2010. So that was the thought. Like, oh, let's hit Jose Reyes third. And at the time, the Mets were coming off such a bad year. I was open to it. Like, sure, why the hell not? You know, Citi Field has sort of been built for Jose Reyes and his skill sets. Well, I'm okay with it. So they hit him third a little bit in spring training. And then when the season started, they never did it. They actually began the season with, I think it was Angel Pagan as the leadoff hitter. When they got to May, early May of that season, and the team was hovering right around 500 and not being able to score any runs, that's when Jerry Manuel said, F it, let's just do it. Let's move Jose Reyes to the three hole. And it did not work. Now, you may not realize this. I actually didn't even realize this till I looked it up. A few years later, after Jose left the Mets to sign with the Marlins, they batted him third a bunch of times, and he had much more success doing that in Miami with the Marlins. But when he was a New York Met in 2010, and they flirted with the idea of Jose Reyes being the guy who could bat third, it did not work. In fact, here are his numbers from that year. 2010, batting third, Jose Reyes started 20 games. He hit .207, .253 on base, no home runs, 6 RBIs, 6 stolen bases, a .533 OPS. When he batted leadoff in that same season, he hit .298, .333 on base, 11 home runs, .790 OPS. This was all the year before he became the batting crown champion, and then a year before he left as a free agent. I just thought that toying with Jose Reyes turned out to be a stupid decision, and I think toying with Brandon Nimmo with the way this team is constructed right now would be a very, very bad decision, in my opinion. Now, do the people agree? We've got some emails and a lot of tweets about the Mets potentially batting Brandon Nimmo not first and maybe protecting Pete Alonso or maybe even batting ninth. Jimmy writes, my initial reaction to moving Nimmo out of leadoff spot was it's a dumb idea, but I think as long as it's Lindor, it could be a good move. I respect Nimmo for his constant work to be a better player, but base stealing hasn't worked out and that's okay. Lindor made a game out of stealing bases last year. He wanted to be a 30-30 guy, so put him in the leadoff spot and let him go. His on-base percentage doesn't lead itself to the leadoff spot, but he's a veteran who can slightly alter his approach without taking away from his power. I like Nimmo in the two spot. He's a patient hitter, providing Lindor time to steal. Nimmo can also drop a bunt and a good guy to hit and run with. I would not drop him lower in the order. I still want his bat up in the first inning. You suggested throwing Alvarez into the fire and batting him fourth. How about a lineup of Lindor, Nimmo, Pete, Alvarez, etc.? What do you guys think? I got to give him this. Hoff, I got to give him this. If you're taking Nimmo out of the leadoff spot, his idea is the only one I would say, okay, give it a try. Because you're not taking away from the beauty of Brandon Nimmo. What I mean by that is if you want to go lead off Lindor with the thought of let's take advantage of stolen bases, because when Lindor is on first and Alonso's up, you don't want Pete kind of sitting there taking pitches. You want Pete trying to hit a home run. So you don't want, you know, maybe Lindor will actually lose some of his aggressiveness because he's on base with a Pete Alonso up, as compared to Lindor being on base with a Brandon Nimmo up who's incredibly patient. So you unlock Lindor a little bit more, and you're not kind of ignoring the fact that Nimmo's great skill is getting on base. He's still getting on base ahead of Pete Alonso and Francisco Alvarez. I don't love it, as much as sticking with Nimmo in the leadoff hole, but I think the way Jimmy sells it, it's not terrible. That one's intriguing. That one's very, very intriguing. The only negative before you continue is that you're taking Lindor's RBI opportunities away. That's the negative. Sorry, go ahead, man.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. Because now my idea is you put Nimmo at the nine hole. I know that may be unrealistic, but Lindor leading off and basically having Bader, if you're going to put Bader as the nine guy or Vientos, you're talking about a bottom end of the lineup that's probably never going to get on for Lindor, and his RBI totals are going to be, you know, terrible for this season. But on the other hand, might score more runs too.
Yeah, that's the negative. I think that the big positive is the idea that Lindor being on base with Nimmo up is going to give him more opportunities to steal bases, so his stolen base numbers can go up big time. The big negative is you are, in a weird way, neutering your best RBI hitter by not giving him an RBI opportunity. When Brandon Nimmo is the leadoff hitter and he starts off with a walk or he starts off with a double, which he can do 39% of the time by being on base, Lindor's got an opportunity to do something. He's got an opportunity to drive a run in. He's leading off the game. Obviously, he's not driving anyone in but himself. And then, like you said, Pete, later in the game, the guys who need to get on are the bottom hitters. So you have to weigh, and that's why I like Jimmy's idea, but I would still prefer Nimmo 1, Lindor 2, because I'd rather take advantage of Lindor driving guys in than Nimmo stealing more, than Lindor stealing more bases. Hold on, let me phrase this correctly. I'd rather take advantage, because I know I'm messing up the order of this. I'd rather take advantage of Lindor driving guys in than Lindor being able to steal more because Nimmo's behind him. But very good idea, Jimmy. I respect it. Dan writes, Nomo Nimmo. The move of Nimmo from out of the leadoff spot is way overdue. They've been trotting out the same top of the lineup going on four straight years now, and we keep wondering why this offense feels stale. He's a statue when he gets on, too scared and conservative running the bases, and also his on-base percentage, which everyone likes to cite how high it is, has been declining since its high in 2018. I don't count fake 2020 and his half a season in 2021. We keep him there. Why? Because he sprints to first like he's the coach's son who is sent out there to show everyone how to hustle? What good is that when he gets there and has his feet planted like a cement truck just buried in there? My solution would be to put Lindor leading off. He has a tendency of thinking he's Francisco Ruth sometimes and swinging like he's Mark McGwire chasing the home run record. Maybe that will settle him down and change his approach so he can become more consistent for entire years at a time. Put Nimmo behind Pete and Alvarez and basically have another leadoff hitter starting the back half of the lineup. Even though Nimmo's on-base percentage has gone down over the years, it's still far and away the best on the team. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to say, well, he hasn't gotten on 40% of the time in a while, you know, that hasn't happened. Yeah, but he's still getting on base 37% of the time. So here are the numbers he's talking about. Last year, 363, which, like we talked about, highest on the team. Year before that, 367. Year before that, he missed half the season, 401. 2020, 404. 2019, missed half the season, 375. 2018, it was at 404. It was unbelievable. He only had 263. He was on base 40% of the time. He drew 80 walks in 140 games, which is the highest of his career. So he's partially right about the on base going down, but going down a 363 is still pretty good. But I like the ripping of him. Cement truck feet. Don't rip his fake hustle. That's not fake hustle. That's just what he does. He runs to first base. He gets everybody excited. Stephen Wolf writes, Nimmo batting second. I want to discuss the construction of the 2023 roster and why they should look at the 2006 team for perpetual winning success. I think he meant 2024 roster because I think we're up to 2024 now. In my opinion, the 2006 team was the most dominant team since the 86 World Series team. If you remember the 2006 Mets, they were in the top five of first inning runs. Evan, the question you should ask is, how did they do this? The answer is their lineup construction. The lineup at the top was key, unlike today, where teams bat their best hitter in the two-hole. The Mets had Reyes batting one and none other than Paul LaDuca there, slow-footed catcher batting second. The reason this tandem was and is key to success then and could be now is because if Reyes were to get on, LaDuca would get into deep counts to allow him to steal second, and something which I would consider to be a lost art was that Paul would get Reyes to third by hitting the ball the other way at the very least. This allowed Beltran and Delgado to mash by putting pressure on the pitcher when you had men on base early, and don't forget Reyes, 200 runs scored that year. Well, he didn't score 200 runs that year, but he had 100 runs that year, I think is what he meant. Now, something that has bothered me for a long time in regards to the current team is Brandon Nimmo hitting in the one hole. He's the prototypical two hitter, reason being he's in the top five in the league and pitches looked at. If you had a speedster in the one hole, this would give the Mets ample opportunities to steal a base and put pressure on the pitcher, especially with the new rules in place from last year. Why is this important? The Mets were last in the first inning runs in 2023, and there is great correlation between teams that score in the first inning and being playoff teams. It's great that Brandon could get on base at will, but not by being able to steal bases or being a threat to do it at all. Doesn't make sense in the one hole. Let me know your thoughts. My thoughts are, you guys are right about Nimmo not being a threat to steal. Pete said it. Jimmy said it. Steven's saying, I'm not disagreeing with that. But you also have to look at, okay, who's on the roster? What makes this work? In 2006, it worked. It worked because they had absolute mashers in Carlos Delgado, David Wright, and Carlos Beltran, Delgado, and Wright, to crush and drive all those runs in. The other thing that made it work is that Paul LaDuca in 2006 had the best year of his career by a lot. Paul LaDuca that year hit .318. It's not like he was walking a million times. It's that he had .318. So, yeah, it worked. It worked because Reyes was Reyes. LaDuca hit .320. And then you had those three mashers driving those runs in. So the reason why the Mets in 06 had this prolific offense and scored so many first inning runs, I don't necessarily think was because of the lineup Willie Randolph put together in terms of order, but because he had a lot of great players. And he had a guy like LaDuca having an outstanding season. The equivalent of Paul LaDuca in terms of the season he had in 2006 is Jeff McNeil. That's the equivalent. Because Jeff McNeil doesn't walk a lot. LaDuca wasn't walking a lot. McNeil can hit the ball to the right side, move a guy from second to third. Same thing with LaDuca. So if McNeil's hitting .320, it works in the two-hole. But we don't know if we're going to get that from Jeff McNeil. And we also don't have the same amount of mashers that Met team had in 2006. But I think that what's interesting about this conversation is that we may not be that far away from it making sense because of the young players that could come up and serve in the roles of players that they don't have yet. Like a high on-base guy who can also steal, like a Jet Williams or a Drew Gilbert. Like Brandon Nimmo making perfect sense as a two-place hitter. I don't think he makes sense as a two-place hitter right now just because they're not deep enough. They don't have another run production guy after Lindor and Alonso, unless Alvarez proves to be that guy. But interesting discussion. We'll see if Carlos Mendoza makes a big change. Obviously, more thoughts. You can leave us a voicemail. You can email us, thericob@gmail.com. Couple other things to get to. J.D. Davis. Let's put this out of the misery. Let's put this away immediately. The San Francisco Giants, after the moves they've made over the last few weeks, they signed Jorge Soler, they signed Matt Chapman, they decided to place J.D. Davis on waivers. And that has led to, really every baseball fan saying, oh, J.D. Davis is available. Do we want him? Now, we had him. We had J.D. Davis in 2019, in 2020, in 2021, and for the first part of 2022 until we traded him in that marvelous, marvelous transaction for Darren Ruff. Let me make this perfectly clear. I don't want J.D. Davis. I have no interest in J.D. Davis. J.D. Davis doesn't make any sense. J.D. Davis was not some career Met who we got to bring him home. Okay, this is not some career legend that we got to bring J.D. Davis home. We don't need to bring J.D. Davis home. There is no need for bringing J.D. Davis home. Because ask yourself this. If the Mets got J.D. Davis and they brought him in, what are you going to do with him? You know, for anyone who's not high on Mark Vientos, would you really rather watch J.D. Davis get right-handed at-bats at DH over Mark Vientos, who at least there's a little bit of unknown to? There's a little bit of, you never know. Maybe he's going to put it all together. There's none of that with J.D. Davis. And he's not that good. That's the topper to all this. J.D. Davis, after he was traded to San Francisco, hit quite a bit. Like, right after the trade, he had a bunch of home runs, and he was tearing it up, and it made us look and say, what the hell did we just do? Like, where did this come from also? Because he was getting plenty of opportunities early in 2022, and he was sitting there hitting 230, swinging at fastballs right through, and striking out a million times. But he's not that good, I think, is the moral of this story. I am not against adding a DH. I have been for adding a DH for a very long time, and J.D. Martinez continues to be out there. If they signed him, I'd say great. And as I've mentioned, there's plenty of ways to still give Vientos and Beatty opportunities. But J.D. Davis isn't good enough. He's not. He'd be a waste. So let me just say, at least representing myself, no gracias to J.D. Davis.
The only positive by the Mets going and bringing back J.D. Davis would be that I feel that the Mets actually won that trade. That in the end, we traded whatever crap for J.D. Davis and Darren Ruff. That's the only positive I can take out of that. But yeah, I don't need J.D. Davis anymore.
Well, just remember, the guy who made that trade isn't here anymore. So David Stearns has no interest in making Billy Epler feel better about the failed Darren Ruff trade. Brendan O'Donohue brought something up I absolutely wanted to bring up, but I'm going to let his beautiful words make the case. And I will point out that everything this man says, I completely agree with. Okay? Brandon, here are your words. I think for the Mets to be a competitive team this season, they will need an elite bullpen. So why cut Nate Lavender from the major league roster? This spring, he has faced 9 batters, no hits, no walks, 7 strikeouts. Who gives a shit if you're paying Fujinami $3.5 million to pitch in AAA to start the season? And who cares if you have to pass Phil Bickford through waivers? Put the best players on the team to start the season. The Mets need every win they can get, as they will most likely be fighting for a wild card spot. Lavender is 24, and he's paid his dues in the minors and has nothing left to prove there. I'd really hate to see the Mets lose a couple of games in April because they had to turn to Bickford or Tonkin in the 7th, and they lose a lead. So this is what is so frustrating about this time of year and building a roster. Guys who do not have options have this distinct advantage of making a bullpen. Michael Tonkin, no options. Johan Ramirez, no options. Phil Bickford, no options. Sean Reed Foley, no options. Those guys I just mentioned, and no offense to any of them. I mean, it's not a personal shot at them. It doesn't mean they're not good. It doesn't mean one of these guys shouldn't make the roster. But Tonkin, Ramirez, Bickford, and Reed Foley have this edge on a roster spot based on the Mets feel they'll lose him if they don't make the 26-man roster. And so what's frustrating about that is when you got a guy like Lavender, who is not that far away, okay? It's not like Nate Lavender only pitched in AA last year and we're just watching some minor leaguer pitch really well and we shouldn't get that excited. That's not the case. Last year, Nate Lavender pitched in AAA. He did. He threw 44 innings at AAA Syracuse. So we're talking about a reliever that is obviously very, very close. It sucks that a guy who is young, who right now looks completely unhittable, at least in spring training, was given no shot to make this roster because the Mets feel like keeping Reed Foley, Bickford, Ramirez, and Tonkin away from another team matters more. Now, I get what they're thinking. Their thinking is, look, let's keep as many pitchers as we can. Guys are going to get hurt. Like, let's say one of these reliable bullpen arms that are going to be on the 26-man roster who don't have options to send down, whether it's Diaz, Raley, Diekman, Lopez, Smith, Ottavino. One of those guys goes on the IL. Yeah, Nate Lavender can come up. We already have Sean Reed Foley on the team. We haven't lost him. No harm, no foul. I get it, but it sucks. I get it, but you still want to have your best relievers on the major league roster come opening day. And that's not going to happen. It's not. It's not going to happen because they've already sent Nate Lavender down. Nate Lavender is striking out every hitter he faced. Here's the good news, though, because I want to be at least calm about it. Nate Lavender's going to be on the New York Mets at some point in 2024. He is. Guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to be ineffective. But I guess what's frustrating is that, let's say Sean Reed Foley is a guy who makes the team, and he probably will. He's looked good so far in spring training. No knock on him. He's earning that spot. Sean Reed Foley makes the team. Sean Reed Foley has a garbage April. And then the Mets say, all right, well, DFA him. Let's go to Nate Lavender. What the hell was the point? Like, if a guy's going to be here to struggle for a month and a half to then finally get the DFA papers, why not just have your best reliever make the team immediately? And that's frustrating, especially for those of us that are sitting here watching spring training or checking out the box scores, and you see the way Nate Lavender's pitching, and you see the fact that he's 24 years old, you see the fact that he's a lefty, you see the fact that he pitched at AAA last year, and it's like, what are we doing here? Why isn't this guy on the roster? Because you need as many pitchers in your pool of pitchers as humanly possible, even if it means keeping one of the best 26 in the minor leagues.
Another thing that bothers me is we saw this with Ronnie Mauricio last year. Like, he was tearing it up in AAA. You know, I thought he was the best out of the entire group, should have gotten opportunities sooner. Obviously, they quote unquote didn't have a place to play him. They wanted him down there longer. And then all of a sudden there was a lull. And everyone's going, oh, we'll see, you know, Mauricio's struggling right now. It was too soon to call him up anyway. How about the fact that these kids are killing it in spring training, in the minors, and they're seeing all these other players in the big leagues suck or get called up, and they're not? It gets frustrating. So, yeah, I think they have to – I think it's time for the big leagues, the major league team to look and say – you know what? If someone's killing it in the minors and they deserve to be on this roster, bring them up and so be it. If someone gets Scott Reed Foley, so be it.
Yeah. I think the thought is that to get through 162 games, the New York Mets are going to have to probably use, you want to say 25 pitchers? I'm trying to think about what that number was a year ago, but counting everybody that starts, counting everybody that's in the bullpen, you know, you use so many different pitchers. In fact, I'm going to give you the number right now because I'm looking at it from last year's Baseball Reference, and I have the number. I got to not include Luis Guillorme. He threw an inning. I can't include Danny Mendick. He threw two innings. We got to keep those guys out. The answer is, wow, it's higher than I thought. How many pitchers do you think threw a pitch for the New York Mets last year, excluding the position players in Guillorme and Mendick who threw pitches? What do you think the answer is?
You're talking about the bullpen and starting rotation.
I'm talking about both. I'm talking about anybody that threw a pitch for the New York Mets last year, a pitcher that was on their roster at some point. If you add up all the pitchers that were on the major league roster in 2023, what is that number?
I think it's like 33.
Very good guess. The answer is 35. Woo! So I say 25. Forget 25. And look, 35 is probably a higher number because the Mets obviously made trades. They brought guys, whatever. If you're going to have to use 30 pitchers to get through a major league season, their thought is the Sean Reed Foleys of the world, the Johan Ramirez of the world, let's keep them around as long as humanly possible. So I get the thought. Like, I don't need anyone explaining it to me. Like, I get you need as many pitchers as you can because you never know when there are injuries. You never know when guys are going to have to come up and get a big out to bail you out and win a game. Like, we saw that last year. Who was that guy who came in and got a huge save in L.A.? I forget who it was. Denny Reyes, maybe? Maybe it was Denny Reyes who did it. Point is, you're going to need that. But still, if a guy is ready to be a major league contributor, you shouldn't hold them down simply because of options. And that's what happened to Nate Lavender. I'm going to give you a date. I'm going to say April 29th. April 29th is my prediction on the day Nate Lavender is called up to the New York Mets. So save that. April 29th, Nate Lavender, New York Met. Another thing, I think this was Thursday night spring training game that the Mets played. Mets have been playing a handful of night spring training games. They've got a few more coming up this week, including the spring training debut of Edwin Diaz on Monday. And there was an obstruction called for blocking the base, for using your foot to block, I think it was second base or, yeah, maybe first base, second base. I forget where it was. And I saw that, and on the broadcast, they kind of quickly rolled over it. It's kind of a new rule. Apparently, it's not a new rule, but MLB's Joint Competition Committee talked about implementing a new rule over the last two off seasons and eventually decided that the existing rule that is on place right now actually covers obstruction, but they're going to tell umpires, hey, you should enforce this. This has not been enforced as rigorously as it could over the last few years. Here's the way the rule's written. It's rule 6.01H. Obstruction is the act of a fielder who, while not in possession of the ball and not in the act of fielding the ball, impedes the progress of any runner. So when an infielder is blocking the path of a runner with his foot or his whole leg, that is obstruction. Umpires have been allowing it for years to the point where I've gotten used to it, where you've got, let's say, a guy stealing second base and a shortstop is covering and all of a sudden their foot blocks the bag and the guy slides in and never gets to the bag because they run into the foot. Same thing on pickoff attempts at first base where the first baseman, I'm not a great athlete. I loved playing first base and I was actually decent at it. I wouldn't say I was great at it. I was decent at it. And I love the art of it. And one of the things I would always do is I'd make sure my foot was blocking that guy diving back into first base on a pickoff attempt. And we've seen this all the time. Never enforced. It's a rule. You can't do it. And now they're telling umpires, hey, enforce it. What I find fascinating about this is that last year, Major League Baseball changed the rules, and obviously it caused this huge blow up in stolen bases. So when that happens, sports say, hey, let's find a way to curb it back a little bit. This rule helps it even more. I mean, think about it. So Major League Baseball saw stolen bases erupt last year, and their reaction was, that was good, not enough. Let's make it even more difficult to throw guys out because now we're going to enforce these rules on shortstops and second basemen and first basemen on pickoff and stolen bases attempts. Most sports try to like bring it back a little bit. Like right now in the NBA, guys are hitting too many threes. There's too much offense. You know what? Maybe we'll add some rules. Adam Silver's talked about it. We'll add some rules to kind of bring the defense back to even. Baseball, after last year, said, nope. We want more stolen bases. Keep an eye on this. Wasn't a big deal in a spring training game, and I'm telling you right now, we're going to get a game in April where a guy is going to be allowed second base because maybe our fielder or maybe an opposing fielder blocked the base. Just keep an eye on that. Saw a little preview of that in spring training. Anyhow, email the pod with any thoughts, questions, or comments, especially the big lineup debate that we had today, thericob@gmail.com. thericob@gmail.com. You can obviously leave us a voicemail at 725-222-8699. Didn't have time for some voicemails today. I promise you, we will do it next time. We'll get to your voicemails, we'll get to your email, and we'll do a very interactive Rico Bronya. We got a lot of pods getting you set for opening day. We will give you a Met preview. We will give you a baseball prediction podcast. We'll give you a Mets versus Yankees bet podcast. A lot coming up as we march closer and closer to the start of the 2024 baseball season. Thank you very much for subscribing and downloading and rating Rico Bronya. check out me and Tiki 2 o'clock on the Fan, Hoff with the Midday Show at 10 a.m., and have a great week.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya Podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.